You were just listening to Hard Rock, a composition of Sergio Cervetti. The work was written in 1993 and just performed by harpsichordist Maria Teresa Cenlo, and that was from a Navona Records compact disc. Well, today we are being joined by Sergio Cervetti, who will be with us until 11 o'clock. Sergio, thank you for coming. Good morning.
Good morning, and thank you for inviting me.
We're going to have a tremendous amount of fun. Sergio Cervetti left his native Uruguay in 1962 to study composition in the United States. In 1966, he attracted international attention when he won the Chamber Music Prize at the Caracas, Venezuela Music Festival. He was subsequently invited to be composer in residence in Berlin, Germany in 1969 and 1970 after studying with Ernst Krenek and graduating from Peabody Conservatory. From 1972 to 1997 and from 2007 to 2008, Cervetti was master teacher of music at Tisch School of the Arts at New York University. During this time, he composed over 100 works for the concert stage, dance, theater, and film, many of them commissioned, recorded, and performed in venues and festivals in the U.S. and abroad. Cervetti's works range from the acoustic to the electronic and deftly blend folk elements, European tradition, and minimalist aesthetics. As much of a traditionalist as an innovator, he continues to straddle musical worlds with new works that showcase a postmodern synthesis of techniques from diverse periods, as well as his rich South American heritage. Well, Sergio, again, thank you so much for joining me. We will definitely hear the Sergio Cervetti story in just a few minutes, and I'm sure you have lots to tell us. Before we do, though, tell us a bit about the work we just heard, Hard Rock.
I am not terribly influenced by rock and roll. I used to like Elvis a lot. But that was when I was very young, and then I lost touch with it. And Maria Teresa Cenlo, who happens to be a childhood friend of mine, who is a renowned harpsichordist in Europe, in Spain to be exact, she came to visit me in 1993 in Brooklyn, and she asked me, well, why don't you write me another piece for harpsichord, because you seem to write very well for harpsichord, which is, by the way, an instrument that I really love. Having written already a very successful piece that she performed in many, many, many places in Europe. So I said to her, well, what about something based in some American popular music, like rock? And said, oh, she loved the idea. But I wrote it very difficult. I mean, I wrote it for my hand, and she's a small woman with small hands. So I had to trim down some of the octaves, which are not, they don't work very well in the harpsichord. You don't really use octaves in the harpsichord. And I wrote it maybe in 2 weeks. And the following year, she premiered it at the America House in Madrid. I attended that concert, and I was very happy with the performance, and I asked her to record it for me. So a few years later, I gave it to Vienna Modern Masters to put it in a CD of several instrumental music. And then we asked Vienna Modern Masters to give us the rights to use it in Navona Records, Navona, which they did.
Well, let's talk very briefly about the harpsichord. One thing that I think is very noticeable today is the frequent use of it by composers. We have had, of course, some works featuring the harpsichord during the earlier part of the 20th century, but now its use is much more abundant. Why do you think that is?
I think it's the fact that there are more harpsichordists.
Maybe. I mean, and they're looking for new stuff.
And they're looking for new stuff because everybody associates the harpsichord with Baroque.
Yeah, sure.
Early Baroque music, and then it stops there, because then the classical didn't use it,
yeah.
The Romantics didn't use it, the Impressionists didn't use it, and it's only in the second half of the 20th century that composers began to use a harpsichord, and then the new harpsichords are enhanced copies of older ones. Mm-hmm. This guy, this English-British guy with a very non-British name, Rubio, did some copies of, and by the way, this performance is made on a Rubio harpsichord. They have such an incredible sound, and I mean big sound.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You could
hear. And I remember that when I went to Spain in 1983 to write the candombe for harpsichord for Maria Teresa, I wrote that candombe there in her harpsichord, and she had to cover it with a blanket because it was so loud that the neighbors complained about the noise. And I said, but this was not the case, you know, 200 years ago. Yeah. No, the new harpsichords are absolutely stupendous instruments.
Well, now let's go a little bit to your story and begin it at the beginning. That's a good place to start. Share with us just in very briefly a bit about your initial exposures to music, and were your parents musical?
My father was a clarinetist, and he played with the local band, and he wanted me to learn the piano so maybe I could accompany him. But by the time I began piano lessons at five, but by the time I was more or less nimble enough to play difficult pieces, you know, my father had already lost his teeth and could not play the clarinet anymore.
Oh.
So I was disappointed, but then my father tried to discourage me from following a musical career because he said, you'll starve, and it's partly true. And so I began to improvise in the piano, and I did it quite well. I thought I did it quite well. At least also my piano teacher, my advanced piano teacher, thought that I should really write down some of the the improvisations I was doing. And I did. And then I presented them to the intelligentsia of Uruguay. You know, I lived in the countryside, so I had to go to Montevideo and show these pieces to learned people, and they all poo-poo it, saying this is just too simple-minded and you don't know anything about 12-tone music. What did they expect? Yeah. I was only 16, 17.
Yeah, so when you hear this, and I'm hearing all you're saying, what was it that said to you, though, I don't care, I'm going to do this anyway?
I don't know. I just wanted to compose music.
So that was a very early then part of your career then.
So I at the moment, by the way, I'm reading a biography of Tchaikovsky. And I was so surprised because it's very similar to what happened to me. He began his formal studies of composition at age 21. I was shocked. I thought that he had begun much earlier.
Yeah.
And same with me. I began at the age of 22 at Peabody Conservatory. I had applied to Catholic University, and they were about to accept me because the person who was in charge of the composition department, Father Woolen, I think he's deceased by now, had seen some of my scores and was very enthusiastic about it and wanted me to go, but my mother being Catholic and being totally opposed for me to go to a Catholic school said, look for something else. I found Peabody Conservatory.
Who did you study with there?
With Stefan Grove, who was
South Africa.
Who
Wonderful
was like
composer.
A father to me. He was instrumental in getting me a scholarship at the Pan American Union and another scholarship at Peabody Conservatory so I could do 4 years of studies and graduating, you know, with paying the minimal amount of money. So it was unbelievable. So every year my scholarship was renewed, and he was so proud. I was still a student of his when I won the international prize in Caracas, and everybody was just in awe.
Very excited.
Yes, of course.
Well, let's talk about some of the influences. Well, I guess when you're very young, Who were some of your favorite contemporary composers when you were a 20-year-old?
As I told you, I lived in a country, and the only way to get any contemporary music was, of course, the radio, but the National Radio of Buenos Aires, and also the Sodre Radio in Montevideo, but also the library, the Artigas Washington Library in Montevideo, that lent scores. And one of the scores that really I was in awe of it was Barber's Sonata.
Oh, gosh.
I could only play about half of the first movement and forget about the fugue of the end. Impossible. Impossible. You need three hands for that one.
That's right,
and,
yeah.
Oh, God, I just wanted to meet Barber, and I almost had the opportunity to meet him in Washington, D.C. when they did the Opera Vanessa, but I did not. I don't know what happened, but I could not meet him. But anyway, then I was in love with Strauss. And also one of the biggest influences, you won't believe this, it's Gustav Mahler. One of the first recordings that we obtained, my sisters and I, was a recording by Jascha Hornstein of Mahler's Ninth Symphony and the Kindertotenlieder. And I think that we played that recording
until I think, wasn't that on an old Vox?
Yes, yes.
I remember.
Exactly.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, I was.
You're bringing back memories for me now.
It was. It did something to me.
Well, he did some great Mahler anyway, in general, overall.
And I had to quote Mahler, for example, in the concertina, which you're going to play later on, in the slower movement, because the. I think we should continue talking about the concertina a little later.
Yeah.
So I'm going to stop right here and
let
you continue.
You'll let me do my thing. Well, let's go now very briefly to some composers that have influenced you in terms of your compositional style, and also just discuss briefly the influence. I don't think it can be brief, but we'll do it briefly for now. The influence of Latin American music on you.
Okay. In Berlin, I became acquainted with American minimalism, but it was Terry Riley in C, which I thought it was a curiosity. But then I met Luigi Della Piccola in the most strangest circumstances. We were both in the hospital, naked from the waist up, because the Germans wanted us. He was also invited there as a composer in residence, as I was, and we had to take x-rays of our lungs. The Germans didn't want us, to be to have tuberculosis or something like that. And so we got talking, and I told him, how much I like his Parole di San Paolo, and also the Cinque Frammenti di Sappho, which is to me a masterpiece of the 1940s. I guess I was 2 years old when he wrote that. That influenced me enormously. Yeah. And I remember him saying to me, melody, he repeated what Verdi said once, melody, it's neither old nor new and will always have an impact in music. Those words have never stopped thinking that this is the way music should be. That should have some shred of melody. And in my guitar music, which is my first, my second minimalist piece for guitar alone, the last minute of it shows six notes that have the glimmer of melody. And some reviewer did mention that. And I was very happy because I began then to incorporate the word and the techniques of melodic making in all of my compositions, even though some people say, where is it? Where is it? Where is it? And I see it. I wrote it. Don't you see it? So,
great.
Anyway.
Great. So now I want us to listen to some music.
Okay.
That's what I mean. I want people to experience your works today. And we're going to go actually to a very recent composition of yours, and I have to say one that I love. This is the Concertino for Piano, Woodwinds, and Timpani, a work from 2013. It's in three movements. Just share with us briefly about it and about our performers.
Okay. The first movement is called Echa Pa'lante, which is the Puerto Rican way of saying move forward. Mm-hmm. I dedicated that piece to Bob Lord, who is the CEO of Parma, because he is an Echa Pa'lante person, you know, yeah. move forward person. So, yeah. And it's his enthusiasm always is very contagious. Anyway, I decided to incorporate some of the Caribbean rhythms, mambo rhythms, and it's a 7-minute romp.
I tell you, I remember when I heard it the first time, I was listening to it in the car, mm. and I was blasting it. I think the audience is going to love that. Go ahead. Anyway,
then
keep going.
the second movement yeah. is a nana, N-A-N-A, which is a lullaby. And there I quote Mahler's, the last few bars of Kinder Toten Lieder, when the word says, in diesem Wetter, in diesem Brauch, in this weather, in this storm, I should not have sent the children away, because a Kinder Toten Lieder is about the death of the children. Anyway, I decided to quote that beautiful little melody, which is in four measures, at the very end of the slow movement, as a lullaby. Then the third movement is a chorinho, which is a short composition based on the choro, which is the Brazilian mm-hmm. rhythmical type of dance. And it ends, I think it ends in a very funny way. I remember only one other composer who has done a similar ending, and that's Rachmaninoff at the end of the variations of on the theme of Paganini. You know,
Taridilam,
Tiridilam.
And that's it.
And mine does too, because I couldn't find any other more right. perfect ending
right, right.
Than that one. So right. I am very happy with right. the piece, because it makes me happy.
Yeah. Sure. Who's our pianist on this?
Oh, Carolina Royan is the pianist, and the conductor is Jeffrey McDonald. They're both marvelous. Carolina is spectacular, really spectacular. I owe her a lot. I hope she'd be listening.
Well, we listen now to the concertino for piano, woodwinds, and timpani, dating from 2013, by my guest, Sergio Cervetti. Thank you.
Thank you.
You were just listening to the concertino for piano, woodwinds, and timpani by my guest, Sergio Cervetti. Sergio, who were our performers?
This was an ensemble conducted by Jeffrey McDonald and a pianist, superb pianist, I must say, is Carolina Royan.
Very good, and that's from a Novona Records compact disc. Well, let's go, Sergio, who is my guest. Sergio Cervetti is my guest and will be here until 11 o'clock. Sergio, let's go now a bit to your general compositional style. How has it changed over the years?
Well, it has evolved a lot. While I was at Peabody, and of course I wanted my degree, I had to compose according to what my teachers told me. 12-tone was the thing of the day, you know, especially with Ernest Krenek, who was a super-duper composer of 12-tone music and beyond 12-tone music. Everything was given the principles of total serialization. I was never very enamored of that technique. I remember I had to analyze segments of Schoenberg's Moses und Aaron, which it was like taking a medicine for me. I have to say that.
And it didn't make you feel any better, did it?
No, it didn't make me feel any better. And Krenek was without mercy. You know, I showed him, for example, my string trio, piano trio, sorry, the one that won the prize in Caracas. And right on the first page, he said, "Oh, there, you cheated." "Why?" I said, "There, you didn't. You have 11 notes of the row, and the 12th tone is missing." I said, "Oops." Well, that's the way I wanted it.
Yeah.
No, this is not 12-tone music then. And I said, well, too
unacceptable.
Bad. Unacceptable, yes. So, but the piece won a prize, so you can't quibble with success. So anyway, when I was in Berlin, I began to be acquainted with other types of composition. The Polish school was very interesting for me, and I began to do some things in that style. But again, it didn't quite fit. And then minimalism. I came to New York in 1970, and I became acquainted with the downtown scene.
Perfect time to show up in the city.
Perfect
actually.
Time,
yeah.
Exactly. And I had my first concert at the Kitchen, as I recall, in 1972. Mm-hmm. And I composed my first minimalist piece, which is From the Earth. You have it here also in the Navona CDs, based on five notes, one chord, and one dissonance. And the piece got incredible reviews, which made me very happy. And then came the guitar piece and several other pieces. My Madrigal from 1975, which was premiered in San Francisco. Also, it's in Navona CDs. But little by little, you know, towards the 90s, my style began changing and began to adopt more freedom to the minimalist credo. And then you'll have a piece like Legenda, which has very little minimalist tendencies. But it was a way to refresh my style while still keeping my, I guess, my desire to compose and not making, you know, on demand of whatever style was fashionable then. Are we listening to
that? Yes, we're going to listen to that now. So why not? That was actually a very good segue, Sergio.
Thank you.
Tell us just a little bit about it before we listen.
The Legenda was written at the, it was not a commission. It was a suggestion by the then director of the Symphony Orchestra in Montevideo. And I wanted to write something really Uruguayan. So I chose the verses of Zorrilla de San Martín that talk about the love of a Spanish woman with a mixed blood Indian, which at the end of the poem ends up killed by a jealous father. Anyway, the verses, I knew those verses since I was very little, because my father, who was born in Uruguay of Italian parents, loved Sorriso de San Martín and knew by memory practically the Leyenda Patria, Tabaré, which is the poem in which this piece is based. He recited them by memory, and they have remained in my memory. I guess they will remain forever. So I decided to use some of the most compelling poems, I mean verses, lines of this poem in Leyenda.
Well, we're going to hear it right now. This is music by my guest, Sergio Cervetti. We hear Leyenda now by my guest, as performed by soprano Alena Helerova, along with the Moravian Philharmonic Orchestra, conducted by Vít Mitska, here on WPRB. Oh. You were just listening to Legenda, a composition for soprano and orchestra by my guest, Sergio Servetti. In our performance, you heard soprano Alena Helerova, along with the Moravian Philharmonic Orchestra, conducted by Vít Mícka. Music once again by my guest, Sergio Servetti. Well, Sergio, again, welcome back. Welcome. It's great to have you
here.
Thank you. Let's go to some like nitty-gritty stuff, I guess you could say. Now, you do have an extensive website. Why don't you just simply share with all of us its address?
Yes, www.sergioservetti.com. Simple to remember, right?
Right, and Sergio is S-E-R-G-I-O, and Servetti is with a C. C-E-R-V-E-T-T-I.
Yes.
And by the way, I will have a link to your website on the playlist for today's program that is on my website, so everybody will be able to find it easily.
Great.
Well, Sergio, you have now 5 CDs of your music available on the Navono label, which is, of course, part of Parma Recordings. And I have to say that they have done a great job in getting so much of your music out there and contemporary music in general. How did you get started with them?
Well, it began in 2009. I got an email from Sam Rancho, and then we connected over the phone. And at the time I had heard a CD of choral music by Kyle Smith that was produced by Navona, and I liked the format, everything about it. So, however, at the time I did not have the funds to record, for example, the harpsichord concerto, which is a half an hour long and a very difficult piece. And also, there was something personal about it, because the piece had been written for Maria Teresa Chenlo in Spain, and she wanted to record it. And of course, I couldn't say no. But anyway, she consented to have one movement recorded of the harpsichord concerto, which is Chacona for the Martyrdom of Atahualpa. And I pleaded with her, and she gave me permission to do it in Olomouc. And we went there in, when was it, 2009 or 2010? I think it was 2009 that we recorded that. And from then on, I was hooked, because I saw what a great company it is. It's led, you know, with great enthusiasm by Bob Lord, and I have no complaints. In fact, I would like to do another CD with them. And there's a possibility of doing something in Cuba. If the relations with Cuba normalize completely, they're planning some recording sessions and a sort of a mini festival in La Habana, in November 9th to the 15th or to the 14th.